So first, if you could just say and spell your first and last name for me.
Mark Campsey, M-A-R-K-C-A-M-P-S-E-Y.
Okay, and your position in the 72nd?
I no longer belong to the 72nd. I was the commander of the 72nd up until about 9 o'clock this morning.
9 o'clock this morning. And so can you tell me some of your accomplishments that you are most proud of during your 3 years with the unit?
Well, I'll tell you some of the brigade's accomplishments that I'm proud of. They have created and stood up an FRG program complete with advisors that have a routine practice of training its leaders to take care of families. They created and completed a mission ready exercise, a family readiness exercise, where we validated our leaders through a series of exercises prior to deployment. The first time it's been done, it worked out very well. I think that our focus and support of making sure that vendors and support activities are made available and are known to our family readiness groups. And certainly I can go into the military accomplishments, but most of them will evolve around deployment of about 3,200 folks to Iraq and bringing them all home, and satisfying state emergency missions relative to tropical depressions, hurricanes, and fires in the southeast Houston area.
Excellent. And so would you say that the accomplishment that you're most proud of is your family readiness program?
I think it was more unique. I think our units across the state have all deployed huge numbers of soldiers routinely, and I think that they've always answered the call. And so we did that as well. I think in some cases the brigade did some things in the deployment process much better. So I think I talk about the FRG process just because my wife and I spent a lot of time and energy and believe that was the right thing to do. So I talk more about the family stuff because I think we need to do that more.
Mm-hmm. And why is that so important? What is it about family readiness that...
I talk about it being a great time to serve in the Army. So not only is it because of the way that our public recognizes the service and at all, all-time high. It's just crazy. It's about the fact that there's so much money distributed by Congress up until at least now. It's my whole term where we received all the new equipment, all the money for schools that we needed. We're able to better train our soldiers. But we've just now started giving money to support families. First time in my career in 30 years. I mean, we pay for families to come in and be educated in a decentralized environment the National Guard operates in. We don't live on installations. We have to be able to bring our families in. It's just now been made possible in the last few years where we're able to do that and fund the activity. I think that Colonel Harris's conference this weekend will continue that same process.
And what specific actions have you taken through the unit to support the family readiness program?
Well, starts with the fact that I develop a family readiness yearly plan. I create that plan, disseminate it to the battalions. The battalion commanders have the requirement to do the same. Annually, we do a conference just like this where we discuss our yearly training calendar, and I require that battalions and companies synchronize their yearly training calendars with their FRGs for the next year so that there's a predictable set of activities that both sides of the house know. I think we've removed the separation between the FRG and the units. In many cases, FRGs meet and they do their thing and the units do their thing, but the two don't meet too often. And I think we run an integrated brigade activity. I think it's a growing process that they become more and more apart with each conference we have.
What do you think is one of the biggest challenges ahead for soldiers and their families during, particularly right now, just because of the economic climate? What do you think is one of the biggest challenges?
I briefed that topic prior to redeployment, and I think it has been and will continue to be underemployment and unemployment. I think, one, the economic system in itself, if you take the military out of it, It doesn't matter. It's more difficult right now. The military makes that worse because the truth of the matter is employers are very hesitant, if not reluctant, to hire a military person because they understand the deployment cycles and the fact the person's going to go away and they're going to have to replace them. So we have to continue to figure out what ways can we formally fund and help guardsmen obtain and keep jobs. Not only jobs, but jobs that are able to support them and their families at a high enough rate that it's a quality life. I don't think it's too far a stretch to say that, you know, a benefit that we should get from being in the National Guard is having an activity that does do nothing but focus on us being able to maintain a job while we continue to serve our nation in a soldier, citizen, dual status.
And I understand that the 72nd has not quite a luxury, but has a great asset in the JSEP program. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
JSEP, the Job Connection Education Program, was started up in Fort Worth. I had requested support prior to coming back. I polled my soldiers, and I had 300 and almost 70 soldiers coming back from Iraq that said, I'm unemployed or underemployed, and I'm concerned. We turned that list in, but at that time, we didn't receive JSEP support until after we got back. And what I explained to the leadership was we really needed that in Houston a few months before we got back so that we could have started the resume process and interview process so that they could have had jobs before their leave ran out. Well, that didn't happen to nobody's fault. We didn't know what we didn't know then. But now that we do have a program, we've taken steps like, you know, I don't sign 4187s for soldiers wanting to leave because they don't have a job unless they have been through JSEP. You know, we have a process that can help them with a number of contacts. So I don't sign or release soldiers for financial reasons, which many soldiers use that reason to leave the National Guard. I don't have a job and I have to leave. Well, I don't approve them to go anywhere until their company commander can say they have interviewed through JSEP and JSEP's not able to help them for economic reasons they need to leave. It also helps, it's a routine activity of mine. You know, I work with JSEP, you know, no less than once a week talking about where we're at, what I think they need to do to measure their success and be able to report to me how we're doing and how we're using them, the soldiers, and what do we need to change. I've made sure and I've taken them out of a vendor status at our conferences. They're no longer a vendor like everybody else that comes. USAA, tremendous vendor. JSEP is not a vendor. They work in our armory. They're a member of our staff, paid for a separate contract. So we've integrated them back into the staff and made them a part of the way we do everyday business.
Excellent. So it's like they're just another part of your team.
Absolutely. And I think that we've got to continue to grow that. If we're going to put money, and I have told many senior guard and army leaders, I would say to the president, I got to go to see the president because of some of the stuff that we've done, but I would tell you to the most senior army people there are. You know, I got to visit with the chief of staff of the army, and I explained to him, I said, sir, you know, if we're going to put money anywhere, I know we have to continue to train for the war fight, but if we're going to do that, we have to support families and we have to support getting jobs. So we can't take money out of those programs.
And what do you think, what would you say to employers who are hesitant to hire guardsmen? What can you say to them to let them know that that soldiers are an asset?
Well, I mean, it's a true risk for them. It really is. I mean, I'm in a civilian job now, first time in a lot of years, and it's a risk to have an Army person there because you're going to have some chaos and turbulence. But it should be predictable. We can tell them when it's going to happen. But that risk is far outweighed by the quality and the traits and the values that are present with a soldier employee. I have found in the civilian workplace that we come to expect things in the military that we probably don't talk about too much. We have a common set of terms: dedication, loyalty, service, commitment, selfless service. And we all have that same definition. In all of our Army schools, we learn what those words mean and we learn to live by those rules. And at some point in your career, you're going to start being evaluated on your ability to demonstrate those values and traits. My friends in the civilian world, they know what the words are, but they don't know what the definitions are. So when you get a soldier employee, you get all of those good traits and values that have been grown into that person. They become a much higher quality person because of that.
Excellent. What do you think, how do you think Colonel Adderitz is going to continue the tradition that you have of supporting the family readiness?
Yeah, I don't know that I would say he's going to continue it. I think he will tremendously improve it. Colonel Harris was a part of, when he was the deputy commander in the 72nd, that was one of his key tasks working for me, was getting ready for that family readiness exercise. He understands the whole deal. That's why I was so excited about him getting to take command, is he understands this process, he understands its importance, and I think that he's going to improve it. He's a much smarter guy than I am.
I think those are pretty much all the questions that I had. It pretty much covers what I was looking for. Is there anything else that you want to add?
No, I tell you, I appreciate the job you do. I don't know that we do a good job of getting our stories out. I think we do a lot of unique things, and I think that people don't understand what we're doing. They kind of know we're in the Guard, and they kind of know we do some family stuff, but they don't really know what that is. So. I've talked to the Texas leadership a lot about what we do, and I know they like what we do, and although I feel like we've tried to share our lessons learned and what we do and how we go about it, it's not that I'm disappointed that we haven't done this more across the state, because some people have done well, but I think it's just a requirement. I don't think we can wait to see who does what. I think we have to force units to better employ family readiness and JSET, to take better care of our soldiers across the board. We can no longer afford to have some units that do it well, and some units, if they want to do it, they do it. And some units just, I'll tell you, I mean, I talked to some commanders about, you know, ask them about their family readiness plans going into deployment, and I've had, you know, more than one commander basically tell me something along the lines, you know, I don't know, you're going to have to check with my XO. You know, and that really disappoints me. That's not an XO's job. That is a commander's responsibility to make sure that that program is up and working and that he understands what he's doing to help prepare their families. We can't wait for things to happen, and bad things will happen to us and our soldiers. When those bad things happen, the better trained our families are, the better prepared we will be to care for the family in a moment that we can't predict, but would absolutely be catastrophic.
Great. Thank you so much.